Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here, and welcome to another week of the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It is a Monday afternoon, and that means Frank Senna joins us, as he does each Monday. Frank from Crane Chicago Business, welcome to the program this afternoon, Frank.
Thanks, Steve. I'd like to lead in. Big Bowie fan. Very sad news today.
And it was funny. We were talking earlier, and he was a groundbreaker in so many different ways, but he just had an enduring and endearing quality about him. And I'm a little sad about it because he was one of those guys whose posters I had up in my room. And it was sad to wake up to hear the news that David Bowie passed away. He actually had his own bonds I was reading about earlier today.
He did.
Did you know about that?
I did. And then he ended up not putting out a lot of product during the period of the bonds, and then after that was over, it was a little controversial because then he ended up putting out albums again.
But can you explain?
He was very innovative as a businessman in music, for sure.
Do you understand the bond situation enough just to give me a couple sentence explanation of it?
It was you could basically invest in the profits that he would make off of creative output during a certain period of time. And he ended up putting out an album right after they expired, I think, is my recollection. My other recollection, I got to see him at the Gorge in Washington State in 2002, and an amazing concert. And then seeing the MCA, David Bowie is, exhibition last year. What an amazing creative force.
I did not see the MCA exhibition. I wish I had. But I saw him on his Serious Moonlight tour. At the Horizon. And, at the time when you're living it, and I was probably 22 or 23, I didn't realize that was kind of his big coming out as far as widespread commercial success. I always knew who David Bowie was and knew his music, but I didn't know that everyone else didn't know him.
That's right.
And that tour is the one that kind of put him on the map. They had the big blow-up Planet Earth that would bounce around on the floor and with the fans. Yeah, it was a great album and a great time. Well, David Bowie.
And in fact, as long ago as in the 2000s when I saw him, Let's Dance was one of the encore songs. So.
It's funny how, I think of Let's Dance as a new song because I was introduced to him in the 70s. But
he
gave us a lot. So thank you, David Bowie, and rest in peace. Frank Sennett here from Cranes. We're not going to talk music so much, but I want to talk because I have not used Uber yet, which is crazy. I mean, it's more a fact that I was in a cab last week for the first time, maybe in 6 months or a year. I just don't have cause for it. But the cabs are hurt a lot by the apps on the phone where you can call an Uber car. And now the city of Chicago and the taxis are sort of catching up to that, where there are a couple of apps that will be contracted with the city to put on your phone and summon a cab. That starts, what, next month?
Yeah, that's right. All the cabs in Chicago have to have this app in their system by the beginning of February. And so it provides, in addition to Uber and Lyft, that third option for Chicago residents to hail a ride.
Now, the idea is it'll help bail out the cab industry, right, or give them at least make them a little more competitive with the rideshare programs?
Absolutely. I mean, the cab companies are saying, there's a lack of a level playing field in terms of regulation, so it's still a bit of a tricky thing to compete against Uber and Lyft. But this will allow people who use the app to, find taxis nearby, hail them, pay them through the app, all the things basically that you can do through Uber and Lyft. So it is a chance to maybe recapture some of that lost business.
So you don't have to worry about paying the cabbie or swiping your card. You can just pay through your phone.
Yeah, and there's two apps. It's a New York company called Arrow, and there's also one offered by a company called Curb. One's based in California, the latter, and the former's based in New York.
All right, so here's what I don't get, and it's just one of those things where I hadn't thought it through until today. But, when I want a cab, I'll hail a cab. If I want a cab to come to me, I'll call a dispatcher. They dispatch the cab. When it comes to these phone apps, then, is the dispatcher going to be taken out of it?
Well, you could see that as a consequence of disrupting this portion of the business, right? Yeah, I mean, ultimately, if nobody's calling and they're all using these apps, either the dispatcher now has a new role typing something in, or maybe the dispatcher is cut out as a middleman.
Yeah, and I'm not so worried about the dispatcher's job as I am, I guess, the assigning of which cab is going to come pick me up.
Absolutely. And so, you know, there are different factors, I guess, in these apps based on how close they are to you, and also what ratings they have in terms of consumer satisfaction. So, you know, maybe you've got two cabs that are each two blocks away, but one of the companies is higher rated than the other. They would first maybe send the higher rated company. So we'll see how, see how it works out.
It'll be fun to watch. A couple of cabbies show up to pick up a ride and then get into a little fist fight over it. That'll be good. I'm not a big gift card guy, but I know gift cards are huge. The holidays are just over, and there are probably a lot of people holding on to gift cards that they would like to unload in one way or another. And there's this company called Raise that is written about in Crane Chicago Business, which is just going gangbusters, isn't it?
Yeah, it is grown by leaps and bounds. It's a big startup success story in Chicago. Just tried to get a spacious new office for this past May. The thought being that George Boussis, who founded it, would fill it within 7 years. But within months, he had to expand the space by another 50%. They've got a headcount of 300. And what's driving all of this is this marketplace where for a 15% cut of the on the house side, Raise takes 15%, you can sell off your unwanted gift card. So somebody gets you, you know, you're not a pizza aficionado, and somebody gets you a pizza gift card, you can then trade that for maybe you like Chinese food instead, and you get a different gift card. You pay a little premium for that, but again, it was a free gift to you in the first place, so at least you get something you like. If it's a little less value, you still come out ahead.
So Raise is making 15% on each sale?
Yes. So if you have, you know, a $10 you know, gift card, you get $8.50 in value back.
And they're doing tens of thousands of transactions a day. So that seems to me like that's going to add up to a nice little chunk of change for them.
Yeah, and in fact, gift cards overall are $125 billion annual market. And of course, most of those people want the ones they get, but you would consider a decent percentage would be people who want to swap them.
But here's the thing then, that's not their only business, right? They are also in the data business in a way and working with retailers. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so they have 4,000 retailers participating in their program. So the company is gathering data about shopping behavior, such as what types of cards people buy or what types they're trying to get rid of. So, for instance, are Starbucks customers also big shoppers at Macy's or Target? Do people who sell Lowe's cards then buy Home Depot or Best Buy cards instead? So they're gathering all this data, and they're giving some market intelligence back to some of their clients, and that's a sideline business for them.
The name of the business is Raise, and the CEO, the guy behind it, is George Boussis, who comes out of his family grocery store, I guess, and he is now really a startup rock star in the city of Chicago.
Yeah, 28-year-old CEO making a big name for himself. It's pretty cool.
That is very cool. Frank Sennett's on the phone line from Crane Chicago Business. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk to him about the highest paid athlete list in the city of Chicago. Cranes puts it together each year, and well, Frank's not on it, but he should be. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Monday afternoon. Steve Bertrand here on 720 WGN. Frank Sennett is on a phone line as well. Frank joins us from Cranes each Monday. And this Monday, we're talking about the top paid athletes in the city of Chicago. Derrick Rose, that's not really a big surprise, is it, Frank?
No. So I really urge people to go to chicagobusiness.com. This is a brand new list for us. Chicago's highest paid athletes, very cool online presence for it. And there are some surprises, but yeah, D. Rose being number one, not a shock.
Okay, here's my surprise. Of the teams, and the teams are pretty evenly split, you know, about who's got the most or the highest in the list, blah, blah, blah. They're all within, I think, four to six. But the team with the six highest paid athletes leading in any other team in Chicago is the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, so that is surprising. They've got some big contracts, John Danks, Melky Cabrera, Adam LaRoche, But if you look at it, their marketing income isn't very high, unlike, say, the big basketball players like Derrick Rose, who makes an estimated $15 million in marketing income a year, and Jimmy Butler makes $800,000. So the baseball players, it's mostly just on their base salary and signing bonuses, and some of the other athletes higher up the list, it's because they have the big marketing dollars. So that's one interesting thing. Baseball kind of lags behind when it comes to marketing, although my favorite of the top 10 is number 10, Adam LaRoche, who's the first baseman for the White Sox, because he is the co-founder of E3 Meat, which sells beef to restaurants and consumers nationwide from his hometown of Fort Scott, Kansas. So he's making some money off of, you know, beef on the hoof.
That's diversification right there. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, so he's got, you know, $12 million salary, but another $300,000 in, like, hamburger patties.
Meat on the hoof, I like that. That's an inside term, isn't it?
It is. You know, I've been long in the industry.
I was 20 years ago, I was in Ireland, and we were looking at this ship going out with a couple of local guys, and the cattle were on the hoof, because they said they were selling them as kosher, and it turned out they weren't. So they had to start selling them on the hoof, and they were being slaughtered near the synagogues to prove it. That's how I learned what on the hoof means.
There you go.
Okay, top 10. Derrick Rose, John Lester, the Cubs, Jay Cutler, Jimmy Butler, Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, Joakim Noah, John Danks, Melky Cabrera, and Adam LaRoche. So there you see the White Sox very well represented in the top 10. Hawks not so bad with numbers 5 and 6, Kane and Toews. And I think with the others are Marian Hossa's number 18, Duncan Keith 19, and Corey Crawford number 21. So
yeah, hockey's big in this town.
Right, and it is about marketing, isn't it? Because Jay Cutler, though, you would think would be bringing in more money marketing-wise than he really is.
Yeah, he's just got basically the big Nike deal. They estimate about $400,000, but mostly salary for him. Again, John Lester with the Cubs, though, is the only top 10 Cub member. And, you know, they went to the NLCS, the darling team of Chicago last year, for anybody who's not a fan of the White Sox, I think. And yet, if you look at the list, because there's so many rookies, you know, second, third-year people, they're really not all that highly represented. And in fact, you know, who didn't make the list? Cy Young Award winner Jake Arrieta did not even make the top 25.
Well, you got to figure that's going to change soon, won't it?
I would think so. But Chris Bryant, also not on the list, Rookie of the Year. So this is going to be a nice moment for the Cubs. They get a bargain on all these players. But yes, in the years to come, I'm guessing there's going to be a lot more players from this current Cubs roster that are going to break into that top 25.
Well, there's going to be Cubs from the upcoming roster as well, just because of the free agency signings too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, as far as baseball is concerned, Jeff Samardzija and Alexi Rodriguez and Starlin Castro are gone, but there's quite a crop of paychecks coming into the city when it comes to baseball next summer.
Indeed, and no women on the list. In fact, the one who didn't make it is most prominent is probably the Chicago Sky forward, Elena Delladonna. She made just $60,000 from the WNBA, an estimated $500,000 from endorsement deals, but nowhere close enough to get her on the list. And, you know, she was the reigning most valuable player of the WNBA. So big pay disparity between the male athletes and the female athletes.
Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. You know, one of the things we are going to talk about today, Frank, and as it turns out we're not going to have time, is Walgreens contracting now with Advocate Healthcare to sort of take care of their walk-in clinics. I bring it up only to say we will talk about Advocate and North Shore coming up in the second half hour with Amit Sachdev, who wrote a piece in the Chicago Tribune about the proposed merger there with North Shore University Health System and Advocate and what it means when so few medical companies are dealing with so many of us. So that's coming up in the next half hour. Frank, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Monday afternoon. Steve Alexander has been following the business news as well. And I saw somewhere where I think crude oil was trading. Was it below $32 a barrel now, Steve?
Dropped below $31 a barrel.
Below 31. And how low is it going to go there, big boy?
You know, I've heard some of the analysts. What's interesting is crude is supposed to trade. The so-called normal, natural trading range for crude oil is between 50 and 70 bucks a barrel. So right now we're at 31.01. It dropped, it's crawled back up. Lowest it's been in 12 years, by the way. But we do have some expert guessers who think we're going to get down to 20.
And it sounds nice, and it's great if you're filling up, but there are costs to that as well for
a lot of us. Yeah. You can see how the equities have been following crude oil lower, and the Dow's down, the NASDAQ's down about 1%. Dow's down right now about 73 points at 16,273. So there were hopes early on this morning that we were going to break away from last week's slide, but doesn't appear to be the case right now.
All right, Steve Alexander, following all that in the world of business. Thanks very much, Steve. Sure. I appreciate it. Let's talk a little comedy here. Cam Dupree is the founder, one of the guys behind this troupe called Stars and Gripes, and he is in the studio with us this afternoon. Cam, welcome to the program.
Welcome. Thank you so much. Thank you for having us over here tonight. We really appreciate it.
I thought it was just you, but you seem to have brought the whole troupe with you.
Yeah, I brought my whole cast tonight, this afternoon, I should say.
You're used to working at night, right? So everything's always night?
That's right, yeah.
How did the first weekend at Sketchfest go?
We weren't in the sketch.
So it was great.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
No. The best is coming up. We saved the best for January 17th, which is the last day of Sketchfest.
So that's next Sunday?
Yes. At 1 p.m. That's our time.
Tell people about Sketchfest because it's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, Sketchfest is Chicago Sketchfest. It's the largest sketch comedy festival in the world. I know they have upwards of 1,000 performers, around 200 groups, and we have been accepted this year to perform, and we've been chosen top five must-see shows by the Chicago Sun-Times, and so we're really proud of that, and we can't wait to our performance date of January 17th.
Well, it's a cool event because you just buy tickets for shows, you don't have to be specific, and just wander any show you want to see, so I enjoy it.
That's right.
I'm not here to talk about comedy. Well, I guess I am here to talk about comedy a little bit, but tell me about this troupe. Is the troupe called Stars and Gripes, or is the show called Stars and Gripes?
Both. The show came first, so Stars and Gripes, and then we had a great success, and so we decided to keep going with it, and so we just took the name for ourselves as well. And what it is, it's a touring theater company that's made of all veterans. Everything we do is written and produced, and so far everything's been directed and obviously performed by all veterans. It's a sketch comedy review. It's from the veterans' point of view, and we tackle good or hard-hitting subjects for veterans, such as like PTSD, the VA, and also coming home and transitioning out.
Did
of the
you
military.
Say the VD at the VA? Or?
yes, I'm sure that is a
well.
A big
wait,
thing
so
for
but you're
people.
Talking about serious topics.
Absolutely. But we're using comedy and the stage as a vehicle to administer that medicine to right. our audiences.
And who's the market for this? I mean, is it something that's widely
appreciated? It's for active duty members. It's for veterans and it's for civilians. We make sure that it's not veteran specific. Yes, everything is a veteran topic, and veterans will love it.
Mm-hmm.
But we make sure it's accessible for civilians as well because we're doing this show for veterans, but it's really to the world, to the public.
Well, as you can imagine, I don't have very many comedians on the Wintrust Business Lunch, right? But we are about ideas, so I'm interested in your idea of this show. I mean, where it came from, how it grew, how it's helping, and things like that.
Absolutely. Well, after the Marine Corps, I got in 2011, and I came up to Chicago in 2012 to begin acting and doing comedy.
Where you served overseas a couple terms?
I did. I went to Iraq and Afghanistan.
Okay.
And so I came over here, and I really didn't fit in with a whole lot of people and a whole lot of points of view, and I really, a lot of the things that were happening in the comedy scene wasn't relatable to me because I just, got out of the military. So I came to a point where I said, I'm going to do the material that I know. And I went out and I set out to find some other veterans, and I did, and we kind of came together, and, we became Stars and Gripes.
So there's this sort of underground cadre of military humorists, is that what it is?
Absolutely. I think we're just snakes in the grass. We're rare gemstones.
And you went through some PTSD issues?
Yeah, absolutely. I am diagnosed with PTSD.
And does this help or does this?
It absolutely helps.
Because look,
yes.
I know a lot of comedians, and a lot of comedians, I mean, it's a very anxiety-ridden industry.
Mm-hmm.
So
No, absolutely.
You might be jumping into the pit here, going into comedy.
You know, it is a scary thing to put yourself on stage, and any performer, anyone that does theater would know what I'm talking about, making yourself vulnerable. It is kind of a scary thing, but you know, for me, it helps because I'm able to be in a safe space where I can put myself out there and put my ideas out there, and their art. And a lot of people can appreciate this. And also, when I'm using art, it's a vehicle, once again, to administer to these people. You know, it's not just me telling war stories. It's kind of me expressing my war stories through maybe a sketch or a monologue or a song.
So you are talking about your pain in a way, but through the protection of being on stage, and it's supposed to be funny.
Absolutely, absolutely. I do believe I am protected by comedy.
Right. And I would imagine you're doing a service to the people listening as well, because those of us who haven't served want to try to figure it out. We know, I know enough to know that I don't have any idea what it was like.
Absolutely. And that's a big thing why what started or became a motivation for this show is to kind of bridge that gap between civilians and veterans, because there is a big disconnect. And I'm a part of a couple of veteran groups, and I see that, you know, a lot of veterans are kind of angry and bitter. And I think there's a lack of understanding between the two communities. And so I would like to do my part to kind of represent the military to the theater world and the comedy world, where there's very, very, very military and veteran representation.
So I'm trying to think. I mean, the show MASH comes to mind.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess there have been a lot of McHale's Navy, Hogan's Heroes.
You know why those shows were so popular and so well received back in the day?
Tell me.
Because they're very relatable. Because at that time we had gone through Vietnam, we had such an influx of veterans. You know, everyone could relate to being in Vietnam. Everyone could relate to all those things. Now, once again, we have another influx of veterans, and I think that this should be on the rise. I think this is very, very relevant material.
Well, you know what's weirder about it this time, though, is that those of us who aren't in the military, aren't feeling it mm-hmm. as much as they did during the Korean War, or World War II, or even Vietnam War.
I believe so. I think there's a big divide when it comes to, and it's very controversial when it comes to these most recent wars.
Right. What's the biggest surprise you have when it comes to laughs? The thing that we laugh at that kind of surprises you a little bit?
Is that laughter comes from a place. It always comes from a place. No one laughs just to laugh. You know, it's always for a reason. It's like I feel like most of the time it's relatable. You relate to it in
right.
some sort of way, and it hits home. And so you're either happy about that, sad about that, shocked about that. And I think that's where laughter comes from.
So there's no such thing as a laugh out of the blue.
I don't think so. No, I don't believe so. I think it all comes from a deeper rooted emotion.
Stars and Gripes, that's Cam Dupree. Well, let's introduce your cohorts here. I'll do my best. I'm in an unusual studio, so I think I've got the mics up. Tell me who I'm talking to.
All right. I'll start off. I was a Marine for 4 years. We'll go off to Tyler right here. Tyler, say hey.
Hey, I'm Tyler Decker. I was in the U.S. Army from 2001 to 2006. I went to Iraq two times. I did explosive ordnance disposal, and I've now been living in Chicago for 3 years.
My name is Crystal Clark. I was in the Army National Guard. I served two tours in 2004 and 2008. The first tour I was logistics. Second tour I was attached, emphasis on attached, to an infantry unit. And
what does that mean?
It's basically what I perceive as a loophole. Women can't be in an infantry unit, but I was a journalist at the time, and we didn't need so many of those. We don't need words. We need drivers. I got attached to an infantry unit, and I drove an ASV, and then I served as an alternate gunner on the 50 cal and the Mark 19.
Nice. And my name's Jonah Sason. I was also in the Marines. I joined way back in 2003, and I ended up staying in until 2013. I joined as a military police officer, so all your veterans listening just tuned out. But I also trained as a marksmanship instructor, so the end of my career, I ended up training Marines how to shoot.
And, you heard Cam talk. I mean, do you guys pretty much agree with his assessment of how humor is helping you guys too?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's amazing how well received the show is by everyone. So we didn't really know who our audience was going to hit best with, veterans or civilians, who was going to love it best. But it just seems that everybody really can find a way to relate to it. And I think one of the coolest things about that is that veterans sometimes have a hard time talking about things they've gone through with anyone besides other veterans. And so we kind of created this environment where we can talk to each other about that, spitball on those ideas, talk about it in such a fun environment where we can make jokes about it, and then we put it on a stage where we normally wouldn't put it in front of people.
Right.
And then it kind of gives you that outsider, an inside look to something that maybe your, you know, your son that's in the military wouldn't even tell you
about
his experience.
Well, so it's a weird thing. I mean, so you guys are all writers, but it's a weird thing if you're writing because a lot of your humor is inside, right? It's inside military stuff, mm-hmm. but you've got to figure out a way to present it to the outsiders too.
Mm-hmm. It's so ridiculous, though. I mean, these are just like over the top satire of military culture that I think it's relatable to everybody.
So it goes to what Cam said earlier. We can all relate to something that you're talking about in one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's just like the same theory, I guess, with like Hogan's Heroes and MASH. Like, you didn't have to be in the military to appreciate that type of humor.
So I guess my only other question is, which one of you is the funniest?
Oh, it's always the girl.
Well, if she's not, she's certainly the quickest.
Yes, he is.
Thanks, you guys, for coming in. I appreciate it. It was good to meet all of you. And the Sketch Fest coming up on Sunday.
Absolutely.
It was Belmont, right?
Yes, at Stage 773 on Belmont.
Okay.
And also in February, we have coming up a Second City run, the Second City Training Center, and the Donnie Skybox stage every Friday at 7 o'clock in February.
Stars and Gripes. If people send it to Google, I think I found a couple of pages with you guys. So.
Absolutely. And all of our shows are free for veterans.
Oh, nice.
Very big emphasis, free
so
for
So does that mean you
veterans.
Jack the price up on everyone else?
Of course.
That's Cam Dupree. Nice to talk to you guys. Good luck.
Thanks for having us.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right. Thank you very much, Steve Alexander, Kim Gordon, and Dolly McCarthy. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. All right, so you know, the talk is if a store goes vacant for very long, a mattress store would move in, right? Don't worry, there'll be a mattress store in there before you know it. That seems to be it. They're everywhere. They are omnipresent. Well, where I live, it's not the mattress store so much as it is the North Shore University Health System offices. They seem to be everywhere. They are expanding, and they want to go even further. Amit Sachdev is a writer for the Chicago Tribune. He wrote about it over the weekend in the Chicago Tribune. It was online on Friday and in the paper yesterday, and he joins us on a phone line now. Amit, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you know what I'm talking about, right? You can't go more than a mile without seeing a sign for North Shore University Health System now. And that has to do not just with the number of their hospitals, but also with the number of private practices and clinics and things that they seem to be purchasing. I mean, this is a company over the past 15 years which has seen great expansion.
Yes, indeed. They only have four hospitals along the North Shore in Evanston, Glenview, Skokie, and Highland Park. But as you say, they have doctors. They have acquired a number of doctor's offices over the years. They have open clinics. They're getting their brand name out there. It's for a lot of these big health systems, it's all about reaching out to consumers now and making sure consumers are aware of who they are, and they want to get as many patients as possible under their roof.
Well, they certainly have done a great job in branding, and you know, they advertise well, and they've got you know, the great blue. It's a wonderful shade of blue, and the print and all of that, to where you do know exactly what you're being confronted with when you see it. But they want to get bigger, right? I mean, there's Advocate, which I think of as being western southwest suburbs. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they're interested now in a merger with Advocate, and the FTC is giving signs that they might have real trouble with it.
Yeah, so the two hospital systems announced a merger more than a year ago in September of 2014, and Advocate is already the state's largest hospital chain. They have 11 hospitals in Illinois. Most of them are in the Chicago area. They have a couple downstate in the Peoria area. But most of the hospitals are in the Chicago area. Yes, and they're kind of west, southwest suburbs, although they do have a couple hospitals in the vicinity of North Shore's hospitals. They have a hospital up in Libertyville, and they have one in Park Ridge, which is just a few miles west of Skokie, as you know. So Advocate has 11, plus a children's hospital. North Shore has four. So the combination would be about 15 or 16 hospitals in Illinois, and it's, well, particularly in the most of them in the Chicago area. And the FTC is taking a very close look at the merger. It's been about a year reviewing all the details of the merger, and then last month it decided, you know, this merger, we have some problems with this merger. They filed a lawsuit looking to block the merger.
What, Amit, are the problems one of geography? Is it competition, or what's the FTC's concern?
Yeah, they're particularly concerned about competition in the North Shore, along the North Shore area of Chicago. Like, so they're looking at northern, they're specifically looking at northern Cook County and southern Lake County. And they're looking at that region, and they're saying that this combination would has the potential to be anti-competitive. Particularly when they say anti-competitive, they mean that these two hospitals, when they combine, will have too much market power in that North Shore region. So with that market power, they can increase prices that they charge to insurance companies. As you and I both know, I mean, when a patient walks into a hospital, you know, we're not paying the hospital. They are, you know, if you're covered by insurance, your insurance company pays off your hospital bill, most of it at least. And so, you know, all the hospital systems in the region, they all negotiate with the big insurance companies here. And right. Blue Cross Blue Shield is the biggest.
And so we're kind of unaware of how much we're being charged. And
yeah, most of us don't know what we pay. Right? We get a bill in the mail. And, you know, for example, a friend of mine recently said he went in for hernia surgery, and after he got all the bills, it was like $35,000 for that surgery, which is a pretty simple surgery. But, of course, you know, he didn't pay that $35,000. Mm-hmm. The insurance company covered most of it. So, you know, the list price that a hospital charges doesn't really impact the consumer, but if a hospital increases their list prices and what they get reimbursed for those prices to the insurance company. Insurance companies then can raise prices to the consumer,
well,
right?
Here's the deal, and here's what you wrote about. You know, usually the FTC, when they're considering regulation, it's a hypothetical. What do we think might happen? In this case, they don't need a hypothetical because they could look at what happened when North Shore merged with Highland Park Hospital, right? There are very real numbers there.
Yes, exactly. You're exactly right. So, but back in 2000, North Shore, which was back then known as Evanston Northwestern Healthcare, they acquired Highland Park Hospital. And 4 years later, the FTC came in and sued the company, saying that you guys have raised prices beyond the market here in this area, and we're going to try to stop that. And so there was a long, drawn-out legal battle for about 3 years, and ultimately FTC found that North Shore had violated antitrust laws and by increasing prices too high. And so, but they didn't really do anything, unfortunately. They didn't really punish North Shore. North Shore didn't have to sell off Highland Park Hospital. There were some, you know, guidelines that the FTC placed on them on how they negotiate with insurance companies, but that's about it. So the FTC has real proof that here's how North Shore behaved after a merger. And, you know, I think legal experts think, you know, FTC knows the market really well here. And given their past behavior that North Shore, you know, their past conduct in the market, I think that led to their most recent case here they brought last month.
That's Amit Sachdev, and we will be watching, and I know you'll be covering it to see how it turns out, North Shore and the marriage with Advocate. Thanks very much for joining us on the program today, Amit.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, we'll talk again soon. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.